Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio as we present Pro Wrestling Interviews. This is going to be a great show tonight, and we want to welcome everybody from WLSC AM and FM. They are joining us on the network now, so we're so glad to have all of you listening to us. We've got a great show, great people. Our guest is Big Game James, and our panelists, we got some of the greatest panelists in the world. We've got, of course, the queen of wrestling herself, Susan Green. We've got Sinister. We've got Todd Saxon from Pop Culture Stars and The Amazing Velvet, and others have just joined us. So I'm going to turn it over to the one and only from Ravenel, South Carolina, the greatest wrestler in Ravenel, South Carolina, The Amazing Velvet. How are you doing,
All right.
Velvet?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. We're going to have a great show. I'm ready to step right into it and get it started. First question, first things first, this is all about Big Game James Knight. Big Game, you are a truly great big man in this business. You're underrated as far as that is concerned. You should be on television. That's my personal opinion, and I'll stick to it. Everybody always wants to know this from every wrestler that's ever been in the business. How did you get into this crazy business? When did you start loving wrestling? And how'd you get in? Just kind of give us a little brief description of how all that happened for you, sir.
Okay, first of all, thank you guys for having me tonight. It's truly an honor, and I really appreciate being here. Just wanted to start off with saying that. To answer your question about how I got into the wrestling business and my love for it, ever since I was a little kid, not to give the cliche answer, I've always been kind of a rambunctious child, kind of into hitting stuff and being kind of hyperactive when it comes to physicality. So I was always outside jumping my bike off tree roots and stuff, jumping off swings at its highest point. And when I was in first grade, my parents put me in karate. So I did martial arts all the way up through high school. And I was always a wrestling fan, but as we all know, when you're that age, everybody, you know, they're larger than life figures. And I just remember, I think the first time I really got into wrestling hardcore, back in the day, whenever they used to have the pay-per-views, they would be scrambled on Channel 1. So, you know, we couldn't see them, but I would sit in front of the TV with it scrambled, and every once in a while, the picture would lock clear for a second, and it was like, oh, man, it was like the greatest feeling whenever that picture actually cleared up for a couple seconds, but it was just like radio with a scrambled TV, and I remember the first match that really got me was Brett and Bulldog in Wembley Stadium for SummerSlam. I think that was, could have been possibly 92. You know, I think my memory's off on the exact year, but it was Bret and Bulldog in Wembley Stadium, and I just thought that was so incredible. The pomp and circumstance behind it, if I recall correctly, that was the main event for the Intercontinental title. You know, the family ties to all of that, it was just captivating to me. So the older I got, I'd already had a martial arts background. When I got to college, I started doing some MMA training, and that was around about the time where that was getting popular. And it was also getting popular in a bad way because there was a lot of people coming in off the street looking for MMA dojos that basically just wanted to fight, and they didn't have much of a background when it comes to like some other type of martial arts, because a lot of mixed martial artists, they started off with a different type of training before they switched over to like UFC. Like a lot of them are wrestlers, you know, amateur Olympic style wrestlers. You got some that are, you know, judo experts, karate experts, things like that. And then they made the transition over to MMA. So when I got into MMA, I didn't like it so much because, like I said, there was a lot of guys coming in off the street that just wanted to be tough guys, and that just wasn't the type of environment I wanted to be in. So as I got older, I started to realize that a lot of the wrestlers that I grew up seeing on TV, they got their start in small shows and finding a trainer and doing the indie route, and none of this I knew. So I actually got in touch with Susan Green, and she invited me out to her gym and put me through the ringer. I'll never forget that first training session I was in, because Susan does not have a modernized ring. She has a ring that's from the 70s and is a little bit better than a boxing ring when it comes to being stiff. And I don't know if I'm talking too much jargon right now, but the ring was pretty stiff. And I just remember going through all of her drills, and she told me, she said, "Hit me." And I said, "What?" She said, "Hit me." So, you know, I hit her, but I didn't, like, hit her, just kind of like, you know, "Hey, you're a woman." And I hit her, and then she hauled back, and she nailed me. She's like, "You're going to hit me now." And obviously, I wasn't wise to the business. It was just my first couple of days training. So, you know, I think she even said, you know, "Either you hit me or you get out of my gym or something." And I think I laid a stiff one on her. And she's like, "All right, we can get rolling." But yeah, so that's how I got my foot in the door into the business, by finding Susan and, you know, trusting her along the path.
Awesome. That's good. That's great. And you weren't cliche.
If I'd have known your MMA behind you, I might have said, "Don't hit me."
That's funny. Oh, Lord have mercy. So we'll fast forward a little bit. You got on the indie circuit. You peddling your craft like all of us, getting your name out there. So how did you get that little bit of time you had up in the big time for a couple of things you did in WWE? I know you did with Raymond Lepon. You were in the little group that was what was it called?
Party Gang.
It was the Rosebuds. I mean, how did all that come about? And then later on, you became security with Wardell Walker, with Shane McMahon trying to hold Lesnar back from Orton and all that. So, I mean, tell us about that little bit of stuff you did that was really important to us, as you know, people who know who you are and have been in the ring with you and stuff like that. So, I mean, how'd that come about?
So when I started on the indies, you know, Susan gave me her blessing at one point, but it was also at a time where Susan, I believe that's around the time that you took ill also.
Oh, yeah, I got jumped at work and was in the hospital 121 days.
Yeah, so it was kind of a weird transition because, you know, Susan was in the hospital and it was right after the time I think I actually had my first match. So I had my first match and then my trainer was in the hospital, so I was kind of lost, and I made a lot of mistakes early on in the business because, you know, I was more concerned about Susan getting healthy. You know, I didn't try to call her or text her outside of making sure she's okay and, you know, asking her a bunch of stuff about, you know, what should I be doing here or here. So, you know, I was a little lost as far as the right way of going about doing a lot of things. So to get back to your question, how'd I get a call up? I was working, I was getting some bookings, I was learning the business, and actually I was learning a lot of on-the-job training since Susan was battling her own issues.
Right.
And I was getting a little bit of notoriety, and I found out about they were holding a tryout down in Florida, and another one of my good friends in the business had told me about this tryout, and he told me, he said, well, send some stuff down there, send some material down there. And I put together a whole notebook of just, like, headshots, like professional shots, sent them video and stuff on me. And then I went down to the tryout that they had down in Florida. And it was at the time that Bill DeMott was still the head trainer down there. And
right.
It was absolutely brutal. Like, I think brutal in a good way. You know, that's all perception, you know. Ask a different
right.
person, they may say something else, but I think it was absolutely brutal, like in a good way. And the training, when I found out I was going to go, the physical training that I put in to go, I was so happy I did it that way because I did a whole lot of cardio. Normally,
right.
my weight when I was walking around was about 275 pounds, like natural. So that's, you know, that was my walking around weight, just lifting weights, eating, drinking a ton of water. But when I found
right.
out I was getting this call, you know, I had some friends in the business that had been to tryouts before on new build of mine, and they said, get your cardio together. Just get your cardio together. Don't worry about pumping heavy iron or heavy weights like that. Just get your cardio together. So I was doing a lot of interval training. I was, you know, just anything to get my breathing and my body cardio up. And I'm so happy that was the case when I went down there. Because when I got there, I think it was about 70 people trying out. I think it was about 60 guys and 10 women. Now, out of those 60 guys, I think about 10 of them were referees. So you had about 50 people trying out. And it was, you know, it was a glorified fat camp. Like, all they cared about for the most part was, you know, blowing you up, just
right.
blowing you up. Because I think this is a Fortune 500 company, the WWE. So at the time, their perception was, if you got an opportunity to try out and we can run you so hard that you want to quit, then you wouldn't be the person that we would want to invest in anyway. So that's why I mean,
right.
like, it's brutal, but it was brutal in a good way because I totally agree with that concept. If you really want to be someplace that much, you're going to go until the wheels fall off. And
exactly.
That was very eye-opening. There were people that got signed that's on TV now that was in that tryout, and you know, putting me being in that type of environment where I got to see some of the best in the world and saw how I stacked up against them, it was very humbling and it was very eye-opening. And one of the compliments that I got, and don't get me wrong, they address a lot of my flaws and weaknesses, but one of the compliments that I got was, I remember Robbie Brookside said it to me, and I really appreciated it. We did a 10-minute blow-up drill in one ring. It was seven people, and you had to do it with four people in the ring at one time. And it was brutal, just 10 minutes of nonstop. And when it was over, the next group had to go, and he was like, okay, we need four. Who's going to be the fourth? And, you know, we just got killed. And I looked around. I said, all right, come on, I'll go. And so I just went through hell. Excuse my language if you got to bleep that out. But I just went through hell for 10 minutes. And then I said, all right, you know, I'll do it again. And I was one of the bigger guys there volunteering to do it again. And, you know, that showed a lot of people that I wanted to be there. So, you know,
right.
Now what's ironic about this is that was a four-day tryout, and the first 3 days were all like that, like blow-up drills and running spots and things like that. But the last day of it was all promo. It was all promo work, and that's why I try to tell people today, it is so important that you practice your promos in front of a mirror, in front of a camera by yourself, when you're out in society interacting with people. Learn your promo skills, because there's a lot of people that got that have been signed because they can talk, couldn't wrestle a lick, and there's people that haven't been signed because they can really wrestle, but they can't talk. So the last thing that we were there, we did promos. And the funny thing about that was, at the time, the worst wrestling injury I ever had, I got at that tryout, but I didn't know what it was. So the third day of in-ring stuff, my knee pad slid down, and I got a mat burn on my left knee. And I didn't think twice about it. It's like, okay, just a little rug burn. But I believe it might have gotten infected, and my body registered it. And my body registered it like a third-degree burn or something, because the entire knee swole up, and I couldn't bend it, and I couldn't move. And I was like, OMG. Yeah, so I was just so happy that – I wouldn't have been able to work, you know, to wrestle if we had to do one more day of in-ring wrestling. The next day was all promo, so I put on a suit and just, like, walk without a limp the best way that I could, not to let anybody know something was wrong.
Right, exactly. Wow, that's awesome.
You know, did the promos, and I remember I was working on my promo. They had to be a minute, and I had to line up because my whole thing was be different. So I got up to recite to do my promo, and then 10 seconds in, I hear a cut. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm dead. I don't know. And that was Dusty Rhodes that said cut. And he looked over to, I think, Gerald Briscoe, and John Cena was in the room also. He looked over and he said, is this a work? He said, does that guy have, like, a microphone in his pocket? He said, why is his voice so deep? I mean, I'll never forget that. He said, check that guy for, like, a speaker or something. And then he told me, he said, because it was supposed to be a serious promo. And then he said, you got a deep voice. You got a great look. He said, have fun with it. Loosen up. Show your character. So that kind of threw me off. I'm like, this was supposed to be serious, but Dusty Rhodes just said loosen up. So in my mind on the fly, I had to change it. And I had to change the delivery of my whole promo. So I'm like, man, this is like a make or break moment. So yeah, that gave me a little bit of a unsettling feeling in my stomach when Dusty Rhodes cuts your promo mid-sentence. But it all worked out, and a couple months later, I got an email from, I think he was one of the higher-ups when it came with talent relations with WWE, it was Canyon Seaman, and he asked me if I wanted to serve as a extra. And I was like, yo, that's awesome, because I was starting to see that some of my work has been paying off. So that's how I got my foot in the door with WWE, you know, went to. And, you know, for anybody listening to this, I don't want to come across like I'm the greatest thing on earth or anything. I really had my deficiencies at that tryout, but what they saw in me was effort and, you know, unbridled effort. I was trying my best. I was one of the first ones to get in the ring, and I wanted to just keel over and die plenty of times, but the effort was always there. So, you know, people just getting in the business, I tell them, I say, have a good attitude and show that you want to do this. Like, it's effort, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's how I got my foot in the door and, you know, was able to do Raw and SmackDown, do the extra spots. You know, have some matches in front of some higher-ups in the WWE roster, which, you know, was a blessing, and not many people can say they've done that. So I really, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, it's not done. I'm still, you know, working now to try to get into the career that I always wanted to be in. But that was my journey to being able to wrestle in a WWE ring. And Another funny little caveat was, I don't remember when it happened, but I think I went to an episode of Monday Night Raw as a fan, and I had ringside seats, and I told myself that day, I said, the next time I come to a WWE show is going to be on the other side of this barricade. And I fulfilled that word that I made to myself.
That's awesome. You know, and you're right. There's not a lot of people out there that can say any of those things. You know, fortunately, you know, I wasn't one of those people either. But I have wrestled in front of 10,000 people, and I've wrestled in front of two people. So I know how that is.
And
it's,
sure
it's one
gave,
of those things.
And I'm sure you gave equal effort.
Oh, absolutely. If you, Susie would have kicked my behind if she found out I didn't do what I was supposed to do in front of two people. Who you telling? She done beat me enough over the years. 110
every time you step out there.
Exactly.
Big game. Well, you're being very kind, saying my ring was from the 70s. That ring's actually from the 50s.
From the 60s. Oh, the
50s. 50s.
I'm joking.
We're talking hardcore.
You hardcore. I don't know. You should be the hardcore legend. But you're still doing it. You're still out there honing your craft. You're still learning, and you never stop learning in this business. I tell this to people all the time. You know what? Like you said, you're not trying to come off as arrogant. You're not trying to come off as you're better than anybody else. Because nobody is better than anybody else as far as this business is concerned. They may think so in their head and their persona, but they're not. You know, some people get breaks and some people don't. And that's how this business goes. And it just works out that way. Sometimes it doesn't work out for the best. But you have had some opportunities. You've taken advantage of them. And that's what you're supposed to do. And you're supposed to learn from that. And that's what you're supposed to do. And I'm thankful that you said those things so people, the younger generation, can understand that and learn. You know, don't be, simple-minded in one track that this is all, this is it. This is, be-all, end-all. It's not a be-all, end-all if you're young. You got plenty of time, and you need to learn what you need to learn.
That doesn't just equate to in the ring. It's also a maturity level because when I think about it, if I'd gotten signed to a major promotion maybe 5, 6, 10 years ago or whenever, I would have probably messed it up because I wasn't as mature as I am now about not just the business of professional wrestling, but with life. So the older I get, I start to realize that sometimes your good fortune will be afforded to you when you're ready to handle it properly.
Correct. That's perfect thing. We'll leave that like that is. Go ahead, Susie.
I guess the one thing that with being trained by me, my doors are always open to if anything's needed. If you need to brush up on something, I always have the door open and have opened it up many a time for big game and other people that I've trained. It's not like once you're trained that I throw the key over. I guess my biggest deal is I want you to have gear. That's my biggest concern. Get your boots. Think, worry about everything else, but get your boots.
Biggest lesson that I think that you teach anybody other than being how to be a wrestler and be in this business is not to forget where you come from. That's important in this business because a lot of people have bounced from trainer to trainer and trainer and this and that, and it takes a lot of people to help you out. But you have an ultimate trainer. And Big Hoss, Big Game James, and Kid Wright have you, and some others. Yeah. But you're their trainer. Period.
Yeah.
You've learned from other places and learned from mistakes, and you've learned on the job training. It's always going to happen. But nobody's forgotten where we come from, and that's the biggest key. And these kids need to understand that today. Period, as far as that's concerned.
Yeah,
they need to understand also there's those people out there that's wanting to hurt you.
And take your money.
I'll never forget where I come from. But one thing that I have learned over the years is that it is good to get out and go other places sometimes to see how other people do some things because, you go – that's the thing about doing something well and doing something like with a universal kind of guideline to how it should be done correctly, is that wherever you go, you should be able to carry like a good set of basics with you. But every place that you go to does things a little differently than the person that you've been trained with, you know, from the get-go. So, you know, there's been other places that I went in and been a part of their training, and it's helped me. It's helped me with what Susan's taught me, as well as trying to understand what other people are doing out there, and they might be trained differently than me. I'm not saying bad or good. I'm just saying different, which is always good. Like, just being diverse is always awesome. And there's been a lot of people that have taken me into their dojo and their training facility and helped me out when Susan was down or when Susan got things going on. You know, I owe so many people much gratitude because you know, just helping me out along the way.
Absolutely. And it takes a village to raise somebody even in this business, and I've always said that. Absolutely. I mean, I'm 53 now, so I think in 15 I was 47 or 48, and I had flown out to Houston to go see Happy Hour when he was B-Furious, and we went to Booker T's for the whole weekend, and on the final day, he had 15 men start, and I think 7 women start in the final day. So there's about 24 people. And he asked everybody who wants to, you know, finish the day with, you know, he did the same thing. It was all blow up on the last day. So I said, you know what, I want to see what I got left in the tank. So I got in the ring and I did all the stuff. And that day, only out of 24 people, 11 people finished the whole day, and I was one of them. And then he came over and asked me who was trained by. I said, well, Susan Green. He goes, oh, I should have known better. You a Carolina boy. But he was funny. But you know what? I learned a lot from them, too, because he was doing the WWE style still with his group at Reality of Wrestling. So they did the same thing that Big Game James did when he went down to Florida. So it's still basically the same. I've, you know, talked to the guys out there still. And but, yeah, that's interesting, all of that for you. And it's so awesome that you're still honing your craft. You're still, like I said, you're still doing your thing. Sinister, do you have a question for your buddy, your compadre? Oh, did you disappear on us?
Hey, just
he may have,
jump in real
but,
quick.
But I'll tell you what, it's getting down to the bottom of the hour. Papa Stroh is waiting in the wings for us. And what I'd like to say is we'd like to thank Transamerica Life Insurance Corporation for sponsoring tonight's show. If you need any insurance, just call the magic number, 843-655-8775. That's 843-655-8775, Transamerica, the great insurance company. And so we are back. We've got Papa Stroh waiting in the wings, and we're trying to find Sinister. So back to you, Amazing Velvet.
All right. Papa Stroh, did you make it on?
Hey, guys,
maybe
how
not
you doing?
Yet.
I'm
there
here.
He is. Yay.
Hey, how's it
Yay.
Going? Sorry, I was getting double-teamed by Sparky and Ebony.
You're funny. So we're on the horn with Big Game James, and we were running through some stuff, you know, with him about how he got in the business. And if you missed it, you can go back and listen to it or wait till Saturday.
I caught a lot of it already.
Some
I was listening.
Okay, good. Cool. Susie, you're always the master of questions. You pull them out of nowhere sometimes. You can even have a statement. I don't, you know, whatever you want to do. But, you know, you can either talk about him or ask him something. It's all about him. So go.
I can remember the first day he walked in and my gym on his first day of tryout. He didn't come in as heavy as he's telling you that he was when he went for WWE. He was about 245. And I sit there and said, son, you need to put on 30, 40 pounds. And he looked, lady, you know how heavy I am? And I said, looked at him and said, you look like a buck 50 to me.
Oh.
I always carry my weight well, Susan.
I know you do. I know you do. And you got muscles where I didn't know we had muscles at.
Right? Exactly. It's like when I announced him, I said he's 6. I said, when I announced Big Game James, I said he's 6'6 and 255. He looks at me and goes, I can pull off 6'6.
I just want to say, Big Game James, it was such an honor and a pleasure in the past to share the ring with you, brother. Really. I mean, you're a class act all the way, and I can't say enough about you. And I don't really have a question, but just like some advice that you would give other people in the business, because as far as like conditioning, because you stay in such phenomenal shape. I mean, what would you suggest to people starting the business, how they can take care of themselves, like on the road, and how to keep their body fit?
Well, it's hard for me to say, because I'm not going to lie to you, a lot of mine is genetics, because my parents
God
are both long and lean,
yeah.
So there's things that I can clean up my diet. It's just, and we all have these things. We all got something that we're just better than other people. If you're, maybe shorter and you're just a pinball, you might be just super quick. Some people might eat anything they want and not gain a pound. So we all got, those things that we're better at. But I do know how to help other people that may not, have the ability to eat whatever they want to eat. But the thing is, you just got to start off slow and not get discouraged, because all the best progress is always slow progress. And anytime people start getting discouraged and not maintaining consistency, that's when they start to get down, and that's when they have problems. If you create good habits, like throughout your entire life, through all aspects of your life, if you create good habits and you just stick to them, then you will start to see the payoff from them. Practice delayed gratification. The food that we eat right now, going to fast food places, getting these burgers and stuff, and I am totally guilty of it too, so I'm not being hypocritical, because I know better and I still do it now. But, just not – a lot of that stuff adds so much fat to you. It adds so much inflammation to your joints where you don't want to go to the gym because you're in pain. And, I'm a big believer that most of our problems that we have in life, we already know the answers to. It's just very hard to implement those solutions. So when somebody come in and they want to maintain, drink water, drink a gallon of water a day. Don't drink sodas. Don't drink sugary drinks, because those things pack fat on you more than anything. Go to the gym. If you're not used to working out, just start small, start slow. Don't compare yourself to anybody else. Compare yourself to the person you were yesterday. Are you better than you were yesterday? And if you're a little better than you were yesterday in different areas of your life, then you're making progress. And that's where I see a lot of people get very depressed, get very down, where they start comparing themselves to other people, and it just doesn't work. That just keeps people in a rut. So the best advice I can always give somebody is, anybody in the business or anybody in general, compare yourself to the person you were yesterday.
And whenever he says genetics, when I met his mother and father over in Sumter, his father is just a smaller version than him.
Oh, wow.
They look almost identical.
There you go again. There's the truth right there.
Exactly. Yes. Amazing.
Thank you, Big
Game.
You're awesome, man.
That is
love
awesome.
Love you, bro.
No, thank you.
He's only buttering you up so you don't take the title from him. That's all. It's all good. We know. We understand.
I know firsthand. I've took his abuse. Trust me.
He's a worthy champion.
Yes, he. Oh no, he is.
Oh,
he is absolutely.
So are you, brother. You're the best, man.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. So, with that said, I'm gonna steal something that Stro likes to do, and ask you. Not to steal your thunder, Stro, because I know you probably should have asked this yourself. But
you can steal all the time.
Somebody...
we all steal from each other. Why not?
I know, right? I'll take your finisher next time. I'll take your finisher next week. Anyway.
as long as you give it a cool name, that's cool. Keep it a cool name.
I stole it from Stro. It's mine now. That's the new name.
Instead of the spinning toho being the spinning velvet, that'd be great.
The spinning velvet.
The tilt-a-whirl velvet. Okay. So, let me get to this. So out of all the places that you've been and all the places that you will go in the future, whether it's a guy on TV or a guy somewhere in the world, another wrestler, who would you really like to have to work or wish you could have worked? Because there's still a possibility working somebody, but if there's somebody like in another generation that you would have loved to have been in the ring with also.
Well, let's see. That's a hard question. So, all right, so that kind of goes along the lines of who I would like to work, because I think I would learn a ton from that person. One that I've always had would have been Jericho, Chris Jericho, because not only what he can teach somebody in the ring, but also he has reinvented himself so many times throughout the past 30 years to stay relevant and to stay fresh with the ever-changing times. And that man, he's never gotten stale, because every time there's a shift in society or there's a shift in times or generations, he was able to shift along with that. And it, you know, as far as wrestling's concerned, as his character concerned, because this man has been in movies, he has a podcast, he's been on TV, he's hosted TV shows. I mean, he has a band. So no matter what, he is maximizing. He maximized his opportunities better than a lot of people in the business have. And that's the ultimate testimony to being adaptable and being coachable and understanding how to change with the time. Because, you know, he started off as a wrestler, you know, he honed that craft, which opened doors for other things, and, you know, he never missed any opportunities. And, you know, there's something I was told a couple of years back, there's nothing more expensive than a missed opportunity. So every time we have a chance at doing something and we either don't take advantage of it or we get scared or something, that's a very expensive opportunity that we may have missed. And I don't think Jericho has missed too many of those in his profession. And, again, to have the longevity that he's had without major injury or without ever having to retire for any reason, that would just be incredible to – you know, get in the ring with him or just be around him to pick his brain and to learn, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, Brian is a host of his own show on the WFD Lounge. He does a lot of TV stars from soap operas and some other genres. He does some wrestlers. Brian Vaughn is on the line here. Brian, do you have a question for Big Game James?
Yes, Big Game James. My understanding is you train at the Nightmare facility with Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, I've been QT. Before it was the Nightmare Factory, it was the One Fall Power Factory, and QT Marshall's the head trainer. They've had a merger, and QT's still the head trainer out there, but Cody is also highly involved with that facility as well, and it is called the Nightmare Factory now. But, yes,
okay.
I've been out there on numerous occasions.
What I wanted to ask you, do you talk to Cody pretty often or not so?
Not at all. I've said hello to Cody. We've had a brief passing conversation, but no, I have not talked to Cody a whole lot. I'm friends with QT. Me and him talk on a kind of regular basis, and you know, I send him a text message to catch up with him. And he's so busy, you know, on this on-screen, behind the scenes. He's such an integral part of AEW running. Like, people just don't how many things QT Marshall does on-screen and off-screen for AEW. It's just insane.
Oh, I know he does a lot. What I wanted to ask you, if you get a chance, if you can maybe text QT Marshall and let him know that Brian Vaughn, who it was December 2018, I had my 11th and 12th heart surgeries, and Cody Rhodes was kind enough to send me a video from my cousin Shane. Shane went to school with Kevin, Cody's brother-in-law, and Cody was kind enough to send me a video, and I just wanted to tell him thank you for doing that and everything.
Yes, sir.
And
that'd
be awesome.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I also the other question I wanted to ask you really quickly is have you ever worked with referee Radar Martin? Because referee Radar Martin, good friend of mine. Well, he's my best friend, but he works for Southern Pride Championship Wrestling, and he's worked for other companies down here in Georgia. And he did a spot in the ring with a QT Marshall before he went to AEW, where QT pushed him as a referee, and then Harold pushed him back, and it was just real funny. But I just wanted to hear what was it.
I've heard that name before, but I don't believe I've had a chance to work with him personally, but I've heard the name.
Okay. Well,
Thank you, Brian.
All I got, Velvet. You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Tom,
now, if you said deep fried,
line?
That'd have been something. Deep fried Southern.
Yeah, Southern Fried. I don't know where they got that name at. Southern Fried.
Yeah, I don't know. Todd, are you still with us?
Oh, I am.
If you do you have anything to add to the conversation, or are you just listening?
Well, mostly I've been listening because it's been pretty cool. I want to touch on something from the green room in that. And just what I really appreciated was listening to you guys talking to each other, the team here, and just the honest care and concern, asking about one another as people. In my mind, really set the tone for the show. So it's, you know, it's really cool to be able to be part of that and hear that happen. I think that was really an outstanding thing. So as far as Big Game James, Man, the I got to ask, growing up, we always had nicks for people. And swear to God, the biggest guy was always called Tiny. So what was the most bizarre type nickname for somebody your size? Because, again, always, you know, okay. That's the way we were.
All right, so Susan's already kind of let the cat out of the bag that when I came to her, I was big in the sense of being 6'5", but I was ripped in the sense that I was probably like a skinny 220, 225. So I got the nickname Big Game James because I played high school sports, and one of my basketball coaches, every time I would do something like really cool in a basketball game, and, you know, we call a timeout, he would yell, Big Game James, there we go. Bring it home. So that's kind of how I got, that's how I got my ring name. You know, my old basketball coach just calling me Big Game James, and when I came to Susan and she said I needed to gain about 30 more pounds, I was like, well, if I get up to about 250, I guess I can say that and be pretty accurate, because it is, I mean, the best characters are the ones that can be as accurate as possible to their true self.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of nicknames. That was, like, the biggest one. No pun
That's
intended.
Awesome.
You
know. Right? That is awesome.
Height-wise, he is the biggest one. Weight-wise, he's the second.
Right.
But
Big Hoss has got you beat on that.
Yeah. Weight-wise.
He can keep that one.
Yeah.
He can keep that title.
Right?
And when people ask me about Big Game, I sit there and said, he's chiseled like a statue. There's not a muscle that hadn't been chiseled out of him. And when people
exactly.
see that don't know him, it's like, well, that's kind of good description. He's a statue.
Yeah, he's awesome. You know, he's also such a great human being. I can't thank him enough for being friends to all of us on here, and especially me and my family. You know, every time we talk, he's like, are you okay? Is everything good? You know, and sometimes I've lied to him and said, yeah, I'm great, but I wasn't. But he probably kind of knew. But, you know, that's the thing. We all look out for one another, and Todd hit that on the head. Stroh's the same way. Stroh gives me a message every week. How you doing? You okay? You know, so Todd gives me one every morning. So I thank Todd for that, because I'm on the way to chemo when he hits me up. I mean, on the way to radiation, excuse me. So, yeah. So, all right. So, Big Game James.
Yeah.
What do we see as far as more bookings for you around, you know, wherever? Are things, since you're still out there, and a lot of people aren't because we're trying to wait out what's going on with COVID, are things going to start opening up? Are you going to get some more bookings? Are you looking for more bookings? Are you looking to go other places? You know, kind of give us a heads up on that.
I'm looking for selected bookings. I'm looking for bookings that I can always help out the promotion that is gracious enough to bring me in, but also promotions that are going to have quality workers, or maybe people that may not have been in the business so long but really want to learn and do good things. So, you know, I'm at a point where it's not so much the quantity of bookings anymore. It's more about am I being asked to be someplace where I can help out and it's going to be a quality environment, a quality locker room, just a quality atmosphere.
Absolutely. That's a good point. And a lot of people need to take that under advisement, too. That was a good statement. Anybody else
I just don't understand, you know, there's so much like vitriol and like negativity in indie wrestling where You know, somebody may not like somebody else for running a show or for doing things a certain way. And I'm just, and Susan can tell you, I've never got into that. And I never really understood why there's so much of that. There's people that, you know, have helped me along the way so much outside of Susan, like yourself, Dave, you know, you've helped me out a whole lot. You know, there's other names that have done things to help me out, like, you know, Bob Keller, he's helped me out. You know, Ethan Case, he's helped me out. Danny Cage up at the Monster Factory in Philadelphia, or
yep,
right outside Philadelphia in Jersey.
Yep.
He's helped me out and taken me in, you know, QT. And so when there's so many people out there that are actually good people and, you know, they do things their way, but they also do reach out and help out other people, I don't get why there's so much negativity in this sport. Like, it's supposed to be fun. Everybody have fun. Everybody entertain the masses. Everybody go home better than they got in the ring, you know? You know, just take care,
exactly,
of each other and enjoy this ride. So, again, I never understood all the negativity and backbiting and stuff like that. There's a bunch of people that have been kind to me, that has helped me out, that give their time to help me, to help see me succeed. And I wouldn't be where I'm at now if any of y'all was out of that equation, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So I'm just full of gratitude to everybody that's helped me out. And, you know, they asked me a question a few minutes ago about, you know, advice I give young wrestlers. My biggest advice, and it's something I had to learn, was cut your ego. You know, ego is not your amigo. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how ripped, how, you know, technically sound you are. Just go into places with no ego and just learn and be grateful. And the sky's the limit if you do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Say that all the time. You've heard me say that, you know. You witnessed it firsthand when we had that referee that I had to fire that day. You were in the bathroom.
Yeah.
There's a lot
more people that's helped me out. You know, I'll be here all night trying to name every
name of people that helped me get to where
I'm at. But
exactly. But see, the thing is, and another point I think that you're also trying to make is, what happened to the brotherhood and the family? These young kids don't know anything about that. It's all about me, me, me. I need to get this. I need to do all these moves and this. But, you know, this is what I do. Everything, I got to get my stuff in. It's not all about getting your stuff in. It's all about taking care of the business at hand. Whether you're going over or not, it's about take care of the business at hand. And like you said, entertaining the masses. That's what it's about. And you're right. Leave your ego at home. And Papa Stroh said that plenty of times, haven't you, Stroh? You said that plenty of times.
That's gospel.
Yeah, well, just, you know, especially with professional wrestling, but just like with everything else, it can all be taken away from you with one bad bump, you know? People blow out their knees and all of this is done. So with something so fragile, you know, such a duplicitous edge of having a career and being paralyzed, I don't know why people would be egotistical about what they do.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
I had another question of Elvis, if it's okay for
Game
James.
Sure.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, because I know that you're around Georgia a lot, in the Georgia area. I wanted to ask you a couple of names to see if you've ever worked with these people that I know personally on the indie scenes. Have you ever worked with Prince Apollo?
I know who he is, and I think we've been in locker rooms together, but I've never worked with him.
Okay. What about Conscious Heyru?
I know who that is as well. I don't think I've had the pleasure of being in the ring with him.
Okay. What
this
about
is this a long list?
No, no. It's
pay-per-view right now.
It's next to his Christmas list.
No, there's about three or four more people, and that's it.
Oh Lord.
The other name is Aaron Fry Daddy.
Yeah, I believe me and him have done something before. Yeah.
Okay. What about Tyson Dean, now known as Alexander Koloff?
No, I don't believe me and him ever worked together.
Okay, and the other name is, Logan Creed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me and Big Logan been in the ring together before. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is he still working with MLW?
I am not sure.
Okay.
I don't want to say yay or nay when I'm not sure.
Okay. I believe that is the last name is Simon Sermon.
No, me and him have not worked. We have not had the pleasure of working together, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my question, and thank you, Mason.
What you're telling me is I need to get to South Georgia more.
Yes, that's exactly what he's telling you.
Okay.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. So let me ask you this. If I was going to book a match for you with any other indie worker, who would you want me to book against you? Just say I'm going to do that. Okay, right. And I ask you who you want to work, and give me a name that you would want to work.
Let's see. Sugar Dunkerton.
Sugar D? Yeah.
Yeah.
Pineapple Pete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I know that man. He is an amazing talent. He actually, me and him had a 5-minute WWE tryout match before, and he helped me out. I helped him out. He's fantastic. That man has wrestled all over the planet. He did some stints in England before COVID, and he's a consummate professional. So that would
Good.
Be one of the people that comes off the top of my head, like, immediately.
Good.
And I know there's others Good. Out there, but I'm just going to go with
right.
one.
All right. Well, yeah, you're not going to line up a pay-per-view for us like Brian over here.
No.
so if you can get a hold of him, and he's not under any contractual duties, let me know, and maybe we can work on that.
All right.
So
thank you. You're the man.
Everybody, Big Game James is a part of my group called Diverse Effect with the Amazing Velvet as his manager. He is his tag team partner is L.A. Tank. Be on the lookout. Oh yeah, you see these two guys together, you're just like, yeah, I'm good. Be on the lookout for us coming to a ring near you. Papa Stroh, you got any last parting words for everybody?
Hi, it's been a pleasure. Big Game James, love you, brother. Keep on doing what you're doing, man. I know you go far, and you're one of the best, man. And it's a pleasure to be here.
No,
all right, we got
less
than
kind.
A minute
Thank
to
you.
Go here. Less than a minute to go. Susie, quickly.
Game, I look forward to seeing y'all again, Game, whether it's out here at the gym or on the road. It's always a pleasure to see both y'all. Love y'all.
We love everybody here. Todd?
Big hugs. Be safe.
Everybody
right,
take
Mr.
care of
Dr.
one another.
Yeah,
there we
this
go,
is
go,
Dr.
Go.
John saying we're about to fade into the sunset, but we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, pro wrestling interviews.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.